The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello, I'm Sarah Crown and welcome to a Books Podcast special edition in honour of the Arthur C. Clarke Award for Science Fiction, which was presented last night to Jane Rogers for her novel The Testament of Jesse Lamb. The book, which was also longlisted for the 2011 Booker Prize, paints a dystopic picture of a near future world in which a nameless terrorist organisation has bioengineered a virus that is deadly to all pregnant women, thus threatening the continuation of the human race. The narrator, 16-year-old Jessie, finds herself in a world that looks exactly like ours, but in which all the old certainties have been kicked out and an act of teenage rebellion takes on a terrifying scope. We're lucky enough to have Jane on the phone today from her home in Sheffield. Jane, thanks so much for coming to talk to us today. And first of all, congratulations on winning. How did that feel?
Thank you. That felt incredibly exciting. I mean, as you know, there have been a lot of controversy surrounding it and I didn't really dare to hope. And then I went and sat myself up towards the back of the cinema in the middle of a row, and then when they called my name, I had to climb out over people to to get down to the stage. But no, it was great. It was fantastic.
And you're talking about presumably the controversies surrounding the Arthur C. Clarke Award this year,
Christopher
Priest's
right.
blog. To listeners who aren't aware of that, well, do go have a look. We've got a lot of coverage of it on the book's website. But basically what happened was Christopher Priest, who was a former winner of the prize, wrote a blog after the shortlist was announced, pretty much decrying everyone involved in the process, judges and authors, apart from you. So he was plugging for you to win as well. But it did certainly liven things up, didn't it?
It did liven things up. I mean, I think it was, you know, I think the points he was making were very interesting. But I also think there were merits that he didn't actually mention. I mean, I read China Mieville's Embassy Town and I thought it was an extraordinary book with an absolutely brilliant premise. I was really in awe of it when I read it.
Let's talk about the idea of you winning an award for science fiction, because this isn't a territory that you've explored as a writer up to this point, is it?
Not at all. And to be honest, I didn't think, oh, I am going to write a science fiction book. I mean, I sat down to write a book about a character in a situation that interested me. And it so happened that that was very slightly in the future.
Yes, it's the definition of science fiction is an interesting one, isn't it? Because I know that there are authors, including Margaret Atwood, who was the inaugural winner of the Arthur C. Clarke Award, who doesn't characterise her near-future writing as science fiction. But are you comfortable with the categorisation?
I'm extremely comfortable because I love science fiction. I think science fiction is a fantastic genre. And in fact, I've just been reading a very interesting interview with Ursula K. Le Guin in a recently published little re-edition of the Wild Girls of hers, and in that she says, that great science fiction is great literature, and she's absolutely right. And I think not only is the genre definition unhelpful in the sense that it makes it seem like it's something you might not want to read because it's over there, but I also think that science fiction by definition very often deals with big ideas and challenging ideas, and that makes it very exciting as literature.
So let's talk a little bit about the ideas that your book is tackling. As I said at the beginning, the story is about a terrorist organisation who have propagated a virus with which everyone in the world is infected, but is only triggered by pregnancy.
That's right. Although, in fact, I mean, the story isn't actually about that. The story isn't about the people who created the biological, act of biological terrorism.
No, we never really see them at all, do we?
No, the story is simply about the effect of all this on one girl's life, one girl and her parents, and the wider world as it is experienced by them. So one of the people who spoke about the book last night called it a cosy catastrophe, which, of course, is how Wyndham's novels were described.
Yes.
And I'm very, very comfortable with that. You know, if people are going to compare it with Wyndham, I'm delighted. Because I think, you know, that notion of a cosy catastrophe, that notion of a world which is terribly ordinary and which we live in and which we know where something suddenly goes skewerly wrong, we're immediately catapulted into how it must feel because it's from a starting point that's very close to us. You know, it's not on a distant planet where there are aliens. It's in our lives.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the striking things is that all the detail and texture of Jessie's life is exactly like ours. We have iPods and Facebook and little Lisa Simpson wind-up dolls and, you know, all sorts of things that feel like, you know, what you might find in your own house, in your own home.
That's right. I mean, I want the reader to feel this is happening in a world that the reader knows.
Mm. It's one of those questions that you're never supposed to ask writers, but I think that in an SF context, it's a perfectly valid one, actually. So that's my piece of self-justification. But what I want to know is, where did you get your ideas from? As we've said, it's not a great leap. It's not a huge remove from where we are already.
No, it's not. Well, I mean, my previous 7 novels are either set in the present or in the past. And I found the past is a very good place to go to look at ideas. I should refer to here, the person who put it most succinctly was Pat Barker when she was talking about her First World War trilogy, you know, the Eye in the Door, and those three brilliant books. And she was asked, why have you gone to the past? And she said, you can just get away from the clutter of the present. And in getting away from that clutter, you get away from knee-jerk reactions to things for yourself as a writer and for your readers. You know, when I was thinking about Jessie, I knew that I wanted her to commit to an act of extreme heroism. But if I had given her an act of extreme heroism in the present, it would have had a political meaning, which readers would have either judged favorably or unfavorably. I mean, to be honest with you, my very first thought was that I would probably make her a terrorist of some kind.
Right.
And people would judge her and would find her actions good or bad because of the politics. Now, what I needed to do was to take the politics out of it. And to do that, I had to find a situation where readers wouldn't know what was good or bad. Mm. They wouldn't have that knee-jerk response, and neither would I. We would all have to make up our minds as we went along. And that's what convinced me that I needed to nudge it into the future.
And that's very interesting, because one of the interesting things about reading the book is the way in which you as a reader vacillate between thinking that what she is planning to do, and I don't want to really talk about it in too much detail because I don't want to give it away for anyone who hasn't read the book yet, but what she is planning to do, from if you look at it from one side, it does look like a piece of heroism.
Mm-hmm.
And from another, it looks like the most pointless self-sacrifice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, really my starting point, my very, very starting point was that I was interested in exploring a facet of the relationship between parents and children, which is a theme that I appear rather obsessively to treat in various novels. But here I was interested in that moment when a teenager actually attains independence and individuality by doing something, deciding to do something, which is a rejection of what her parents want or what her parents believe. And, you know, we all reach that moment where we define ourselves against our parents. And sometimes you just do it by, you know, going underage to the pub and having a drink when they don't want you to. But sometimes it's a big thing. Mm. Sometimes it's a big political act. And that I was looking for an act where it would absolutely be, you know, if you put the child's head on, you see that this is necessary. You see that it's the thing to do. You see that it's the only thing that matters. And if you put the adult's head on, you see that the child you have loved and protected is mad and has been taken over by some awful thing and has to be stopped.
Yeah.
And it's that absolute moment of conflict as one generation starts to take over from the preceding one. That's what was interesting me.
And what have the reactions to the book been like? Have people sided with Jessie's parents or with her?
They absolutely have. They really have, in a way that has pleased me, but which has also rather shocked me. I mean, my own mother, who's a great reader, and I should admit, one of my fans, you know, has liked
that.
All my other books, but she actually hated this one.
Right.
And she hated it because she felt that Jessie was a very, very stupid, naughty girl.
I didn't hate the book. I really, really enjoyed it. But I can see there is something, again, as a parent myself, there's something kind of alarming and distressing about watching a child make a decision that you think is wrong for the child, is detrimental to the child.
That's completely true. But you see, the other thing that I think is very interesting, and it did in my head, it grew as I wrote the book. It seems to me that, you know, the young are idealistic and passionate, and they see the world in a black and white way, which you know people lose as they get older. And that, in a sense, that kind of heroism, that kind of absolute heroism, is only really possible in the very young. Mm. It is those kinds of acts of heroism that make things change.
And do you think, now having written this book, do you see yourself writing more science fiction? Is this a genre that you might find yourself sinking into?
I'm very tempted, yes. I mean, one of the lovely results of all this, because the book, before it was listed for the Arthur C. Clarke, it was shortlisted for another award, the Kitschies.
And longlisted for the Booker, lest we forget.
That too. But one of the things that, once I realised people were reading it as science fiction, I thought, oh, that's jolly interesting. And I used to read a lot of science fiction, and there's been a bit of a gap for me. I've currently been rereading a lot of science fiction because I'm actually adapting John Wyndham's The Chrysalids as a classic serial for Radio 4.
Oh, wow. That's just one of my favourite books.
Everybody says that. Everybody says that, and everybody read it when they were a teenager. Yeah. Anyway, it's going to air for 2 hours at the end of July, classic serial, so look out for it.
I will.
But the thing is, that's made me reread a lot of science fiction of that period. I mean, I've reread the whole of Wyndham. I've been rereading Arthur C. Clarke, actually. I just finished Childhood's End, which is a fantastic book. So I've sort of been on a bit of a diet of science fiction recently, and it has made me feel very excited about the things that science fiction can do. So I'm extremely tempted, yes, to move on in that. In that area of speculative fiction.
Okay, well, that's a lovely note to end on, I think, and I hope that you do. Thanks very, very much indeed for talking to us.
Don't forget to start your free 14-day trial of audible.co.uk and to download your free audiobook. Head to guardian.co.uk/audible.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.